With such a public platform and public sympathy, the momentum in the case was definitely in the women's favour. And it was at this point that Judge Backus came up with an inspired interpretation of the statute for Berry. He suggested that because the girls' bones contained radium and the radium was still hurting them, they were still being injured. Therefore, the statute began tolling anew each moment of that injury. It was brilliant. Whether it was an argument that would stand up in court was, of course, still to be tested. But Berry found that, in the light of public pressure, the justice system was now willing to support him. No matter the response of the radium company, the trial was scheduled to go ahead. Towards the end of May 1928, Judge Mountain wrote to Berry, "I will set the cases down for trial on Thursday next. Counsel will accordingly prepare to proceed on that morning without fail." Nothing was going to stand in the way of justice. Of that both Berry and the girls were sure. Carried along on a swell of public favour, it seemed they would soon be home and dry. Berry was in his office, preparing for the case, when his telephone chimed. "Mr. Berry," said his secretary, Rose. "Judge Clark is on the line." Chapter 31. Judge William Clark was a hugely respected man. Born with a silver spoon in his mouth, he was the grandson of a senator. The family estate was called Peachcroft. He was 37 years old, with auburn hair, grey eyes, and a large nose. He was also Berry's old boss, back when Berry had been a clerk, for Clark had once been a partner in the law firm Linda Berry, Depew and Fawkes. "To Judge Clark's office," read Berry's diary for 23rd of May 1928, "and talk re-radium cases with him." His former boss had a suggestion to put to him. "Would it not be possible," Clark inquired lightly, "to settle the suits out of court?" Berry wasn't the only party with whom the judge was conferring. On 29th of May, Clark met with President Lee and the legal team of USRC. Berry was not asked to attend. When a reporter questioned Berry about the meeting, he commented, "I know nothing of any such arrangements. I am not even considering a settlement out of court." Though he professed to the reporter that he was more determined than ever that the case will be fought now to the bitter end, privately, he was starting to have his doubts. It wasn't that he didn't think he could win. It was whether any verdict would come in time to benefit the girls. Every time he saw them, they seemed weaker than before. Humphreys had already told him they were not physically or mentally able to attend the upcoming trial. Even Grace Fryer, who was normally almost effervescent compared with her friends, seemed quieter and less demonstrative. "I daren't do much with my hands," she confided, "for fear of being scratched. The least scratch will not heal because of the radium." The girls were becoming like china dolls, wrapped up in the cotton wool of their medical care. Berry wanted them to get justice, but most of all, he wanted them to be comfortable in their final days. Perhaps, he thought, he should give Clark's suggestion due consideration, as long as any settlement was fair. Berry's musings were compounded just a day or so later, when Catherine Sharp collapsed in church. "Pains like streaks of fire through my whole body," she cried out. "I can't go on this way. I wish I wasn't going to live another month."